I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Burris. We all know that this year has definitely been a challenging one, to say the least, and my guest today is a great example of how to take a problem and create a purposeful business that drives positive change for everyday people. My guest today is Lisa Hollingshead. She's the founder and CEO of One Another Community. Lisa came up with the idea for the business in March this year when she was stranded in Spain with her son and her grandma and worried because flights were grounded due to lockdown. But she found comfort in being surrounded by her family and wanted to create a platform as a result of this for social kindness. So she created One Another, and that is to provide a space for members of local communities to request and offer assistance. The platform connects skilled volunteers from all facets of business with those who need help in their local community, both in response to COVID-19, but more importantly, in a longer-term solution to address the global loneliness epidemic. Members create a profile, get verified, and search tasks on the dashboard of their local area, from things like walking a pet, running an errand, or even just a friendly phone call. One Another also connects skilled professionals who have pro bono capacity with local community social enterprises and brands in specific areas where they need support, things like website designs, creative content, marketing, and operations. I'm going to ask Lisa about how founding her business in 2020 ensured an agile and reactive startup that can respond quickly to changes in the environment, and why One Another's mission to amplify the ripple effect of kindness and empower everyone to make a difference is more important today than it ever has been in the past. So let's get into it. Lisa Hollingshead, welcome to The Mentor.
Thank you so much for having me.
Manchester.
That's right.
which of the soccer teams the football teams do you follow?
I was brought up following United,
yeah.
But then I went to Liverpool Uni and then I started supporting Liverpool.
Oh, so really?
I committed the ultimate sin.
That is an ultimate sin.
And now I'm not really bothered at all. So
Do you follow it all?
Not really.
No.
I used to, but I've been here 12 years. So.
Oh, yeah? You've still got the accent.
Yeah, it's still there, still going strong.
Yeah. So I see from the brief here, you're born in Manchester, UK, we know that.
Yeah.
You got a degree in marketing, media and cultural studies. Like, what is that degree? Tell me about that. Marketing, are we talking about public relations, or what profession would that drive you into?
So I guess the degree in media, marketing and cultural studies attracts people that either want to work in journalism or TV or publicity or marketing. So it's kind of like gives you a taster of each of them.
Yeah.
And they encourage you to do, you know, work experience while you're there, so you can figure out kind of which area you want to focus on for your final year.
So did you do any work experience?
I did a lot of work experience.
Yeah.
I've always been quite driven, and kind of when I set my sights on something, I go for it. So I was selected to be a TV YP delegate.
What's that mean?
So basically the Media Guardian did a festival every year in Edinburgh, the Media Guardian Edinburgh Television Festival, and about 15,000 people applied, and they select 100 university students that want a career in TV or publicity to go and attend and just attend workshops. And one of the workshops that I attended was with Taylor Herring, so one of the account directors at Taylor Herring, which is one of the leading entertainment PR agencies there. And I just thought it was so cool. She did the PR for Robbie Williams. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll go and try and see if I can do that. So I cornered her at the end of the session and just said, you know, I'd love to come and, you know, shadow you for a week, come down to London. You know, what do I need to do? So she just gave me a card and said, you know, send me an email and I'll see what I can do. So long story short, I ended up doing my first placement there. And I was actually my first ever show that I worked on was The Apprentice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With Sir Alan.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what year was that?
So that would have been 2004.
Because he's now doing the Celebrity Apprentice here.
Yeah, I saw that. It's so surreal because, like it must be like, 15 years ago when I was working on the show and I was really junior, but I used to manage like the Fired Apprentice's media schedule the next day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because what Lisa just referred to is when you fire the contestant or whatever, the candidate for the Apprentice show, the next day ordinarily they get them out and they've got to do media because you've got to hold on to them. Otherwise they go, anything can happen. And of course you also got to control what they say.
Absolutely.
Well, not control it, but...
Yeah, media train them.
Got to put something around this, because especially in the early stage, because usually the ones that get fired early aren't all that flash. They're big businesses. I mean, you probably got 50, 100 people on the production of that show.
Yeah, it's huge. It really opened my eyes because when I was at university, I thought I either want to work as a producer in TV or I wanted to do publicity. And working for Taylor Herring... I guess it was the best of both worlds because I got to work with the production team whilst also doing PR.
It's a massive show in the UK. It is one of the biggest rating shows in the UK, but it's you've got a big audience too. You've got a lot more people live in the UK.
Yeah.
But it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was surreal for it to be my first ever freelance publicity gig, not even freelance, it was an internship to go and work on that. It was quite surreal. And it was the year that it went from BBC Two to BBC One.
Right.
So it went from a BBC Two kind of educational and public service show to a, prime time.
Lasted, how long ago was that, would you get?
So it would have been 2004, so it's like 15 years ago.
Yeah. So that was sort of just kicking off, really.
It was the second season. Yeah. So it's really, really early in the day.
Well, I see that they're doing publicity now around the Celebrity Apprentice here in Australia. I mean, they've just started to do a bit of publicity in the last week or so.
Yeah.
And the business of publicity, I think, particularly for television shows, it's not such a big business today, generally speaking, publicity, except for when you're trying to publicise a TV show or a radio show, for example. People don't use publicists as such these days as much.
Yeah.
That business sort of died off a bit.
I agree with that. So I definitely would say that my experience is more public relations professional. Like I'm an old school PR girl, building relationships with media, carving out a hook, building relationships, selling in stories, building the assets together, so whether you've got talent or a research piece to build a stronger feature. And my experience over the years, I've worked for some of the biggest PR agencies in the world, and my client experiences range from LG Electronics to American Express Open Air Cinemas to 20th Century Fox. So, each different industry that you work in is very different. And I'd say that publicists lend themselves more readily to entertainment.
Yeah, I think that's right. And when it comes to PR, that's very interesting. I mean, people listening here are probably thinking, when do I use a PR agency, or when do I use a PR person, or when do I just engage in PR myself? And Lisa said two really important things. Which we'll just might draw down to it a little bit, just because this is good stuff for people running businesses. The hook, you said, if you're running PR for a business, and that business is seeking to get some publicity on, I don't know, Triple M radio station tomorrow morning, or the Current Affair tomorrow night, or wherever, you need this thing called the hook.
Yeah.
Just explain what that is.
So the hook is something that makes the audience be interested in it and makes the journalist want to write about it.
Well, let's go to the journal. Let's go to the producer. Let's look at the executive producer of the show, okay? Because they're looking for content.
Exactly right.
So what you explain how you work with that.
Yeah, so we'll ordinarily have clients come to my PR agency now, Comms 101, and they'll have the holy grail coverage that they want to secure. And sometimes clients get confused between advertorials and, paid gigs, and they want to control the messaging and they want to make sure they've got a specific call to action in there. My job is to look at that offering and see where there's a newsworthy hook. So the hook is something that the producer can work with to build a segment or a feature that's got context to their readership, but also to the publication as well.
Yeah, so you would look at the show, like let's say it's Current Affair. You get the general run of business for Current Affair. You sort of say, well, Current Affair's audience is about this, and maybe Current Affair might be what's currently in the news.
Yep.
And it might be about, people suffering from COVID, or small businesses are suffering, or whatever the case may be. And you look for your client, you look for a hook that the executive producer of that show who's running a theme, either throughout the year or just that week or that month or coming up, you look for a hook that, that's something that your client can offer content. That's the hook for the executive producer, because you do, because the executive producer is sitting there every day going, I've got to fill my schedule up every night of the week. And I've got to do it every night of the week for the next year. And they look to people like you to help them out with their content. And not only do you provide them content, you provide them the talent. That, in other words, a person to deliver the content,
like
perhaps.
Like a spokesperson,
Or maybe a family who are suffering and they've got these big solutions turned up for them, and they're, and that family appeals to the people who watch the show.
Absolutely.
Just take us through how you might think about this sort of stuff, so that just so that our audience here today can say, oh, okay, that's what we mean by a hook.
Yeah, absolutely. So we need to break it down into assets, like I mentioned previously, so you might not know what an asset is per se. So when I break it down to the client, first of all, we need a spokesperson or an expert that can speak on behalf of the business to basically demonstrate the problem that they're trying to solve.
And what's the executive producer who's going to buy this hook? What sort of talent they're looking for? I mean, what are they not looking for? Because they don't want to say, hello, my name is John. They don't want that. They want the show to be interesting.
Absolutely. So personality is a big thing. So media training is a big part of what we do, you know, so that you can tell a compelling story that people are interested in and want to hear. So it can be either the founder of the business. You ordinarily, you know, they would be the person that's in the media talking about it, that already have maybe a little bit of a pull from a publicity perspective. Or it could be, say, an ambassador who you've hired to speak on behalf of the brand. So say, for example, if you do the PR for a sunscreen and you have a famous model that does...
Elle McPherson.
Elle McPherson. She would be a great example of talent that an executive producer would love to speak to, because their audience would want to hear what
she
has to say.
Correct. And then you also look for a message. So why is the Elle McPherson message about sunscreen relevant to the executive producer at the time? So we could be coming into the summer months and you might come up with some research about skin cancer.
Research is a really great tool, and it is a big investment for businesses and organisations to invest into, but it's definitely, it brings that return on investment time and time again, because executive producers are looking for exclusives. They're looking to provide insight that no one else has provided before. So if you've got a research piece that provides a shocking example, such as 50% of Australians admit to not wearing sunscreen every day. You know, and then you back that up with the stat that one in two Australians suffer from skin cancer. You can see how you're starting to build the different elements of a story and the different elements and the assets that can help tell that piece as well.
And then if you can say, and by the way, and the reason why they don't wear sunscreen because it's too greasy, but Elle McPherson gets up there for this particular sunscreen company and says, but our sunscreen is not greasy.
Exactly.
It's brand new. You don't even know it's on.
And that's
whatever.
We've built a beautiful story there together.
But I think that's important for people to know, because people don't know what a PR agency does.
Absolutely.
Or where does PR fit into promoting my business? Because at the end of the day, you're trying to promote your client's business. But by the way, the executive producer, all they give a shit about is making sure that their clients, their audience, get something out of this.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of different things, but they're sort of the same thing as well. You've got to find the common ground, and that's what agencies do.
Yeah.
Or PR should do, is should find the common ground, sell it into the executive producer, but also sell it into the to the client. I mean, because the client's got to get it too.
I mean, that is a difficult thing with being a publicist, is you have got two sides, you know, that you have to please. So you've got the producer that wants a newsworthy story that the audience are interested in, so they can build a really strong segment or feature. But you've also got the client that wants to talk about the special offer that they've got, or a new product. So you need to find a good balance between the two and be a great communicator. Like, communication is so key in publicity, and managing expectations as well. You know, I don't believe in promising the world. You know, PR is very much reliant on relationships, understanding the media that you're selling into, making the client aware.
So in your job, in your day-to-day business, I suppose what we're going to talk about in a moment, which is called One Another Community. We'll talk about that in a moment. But in your job as a PR person, how important is it for you to know the executive producers? Because at the end of the day, people don't know this, but executive producers are getting PR stuff thrown at them on the email. They got a pile of press releases, and they're thinking, oh, my God. And it's just like the way we look through our Instagram. We just keep moving our stories along. We just keep flicking. That's
exactly
what I'm
saying.
Well, that's the same as an executive producer in a show. Is it important to know the executive producer of radio shows and newspapers? And do you have to take them to lunch? Do you take them for a beer? Do you send them I mean, what do you do? Like, yeah. How do you get to know them?
I think you cannot underestimate how important relationships are in PR. A lot of people think that they can buy a media list, for example, that's got the list of the executive producer and the email, and they think that they can just send a press release over or a pitch and that it'll be strong enough on merit. I mean, 15 years ago when I started in PR, we were taught to hit the phones. You know, we were on the phone all day, every day, selling in. I was selling into London media. You know, they were off the hook all day. So you had to get their attention straight away. So what we used to do 15 years ago is take them out for dinner. You know, we'd go down to London, we'd do what we called a media tour. So we'd book...
Piss up.
Basically, yeah. we'd book back-to-back meetings all day with media where we'd take samples from our clients or we'd ask them if they wanted to come on a press trip with an airline that I represented at the time. You know, do you want to come for a week to Antigua? You know, it's not a hard thing to sell in sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, it absolutely is essential to being a good publicist. We're salespeople at the end of the day.
How'd you do it during the COVID period? Like, so we got a lockdown. Where were you during that period?
So I actually was in Spain back in March.
Were you on holidays?
I won a trip to Berlin. Yeah. And my mum lives in Spain. So I decided to sandwich a trip in between.
So you and your mum?
I was with my mum, my little boy, and my 89-year-old grandma.
And your grandmother?
Yeah. So
in Spain?
She lives there, yeah. So me and my little boy visited. And the day after we arrived, the lockdown, stage five lockdown hit Spain. So we had, you know...
Well, when was that? What month was that? Because Spain March. Got... Yeah, Spain sort of got it pretty bad.
Yes. When I landed in Berlin, Italy shut down. Right. And then I landed in Spain, had one night in the plaza in Villa Martin with my mum, my family and my granny. And then the next day we got an announcement that we had to be home for midnight and we wouldn't be able to
So leave. When you say you had to be home, so what actually happened? Like Spain... Said you had to get out.
No. So everyone that was there was told they had to go home. My mum's best friend runs a bar and she got a text from like basically the government saying that you need to shut shop at 12 for the foreseeable future. And we got an announcement on the news that everyone had to be home by midnight. And
home by midnight means back in your hotel room.
Yeah. If you were on holiday, you had to be back in the hotel room.
Right.
If you lived there, you had to be home.
So yeah, back home at mum's home.
Yeah. It was basically the same as what Melbourne has got now. It's stage five. You couldn't leave unless you couldn't even leave for exercise. The only reason you could leave was to go to the shops to get groceries or to go to the pharmacy to get supplies.
Right. So you're stuck in Spain for how long?
It ended up actually only being a day longer than what I was supposed to be because I acted quickly because I had a feeling that this inevitably was going to come to Australia and the flights were getting grounded daily. So I booked a Qatar flight that went from Manchester via Doha to Sydney.
So you had to get back to Manchester?
I had to drive for 5 hours to Valencia Airport to fly to Manchester, have a night in Manchester with my dad. And then, come back with Albie via Doha, which was the most daunting experience because literally people were in hazmat suits getting on the plane.
You serious?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Like, I mean, you say it's ridiculous, I understand the fear, but it was to get onto a plane with your little boy, he was three at the time, and be surrounded by people that literally had face masks on with balaclavas on, with goggles.
Really?
It was surreal.
That's freaky. And your business back here in Sydney was about public relations, and you just said meeting people and, taking them for a beer or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
What effect did the Sydney lockdown, it's not as severe as everywhere else, but what effect did that have on you in your business?
It had a lot of an effect on many people's businesses in PR. At the beginning of the lockdown in Sydney, I actually lost my client base due to COVID. A lot of clients were pulling back budgets, you know, didn't want to invest in PR. But a lot of my friends that had clients that remained, they really struggled to get coverage and build relationships because the media landscape was changing daily as well. So not only was I losing clients and many other PR agencies losing clients, the media landscape was shrinking daily. So existing relationships were thin on the ground.
All new people were sort of moving into the roles that you used to talk to.
Exactly right. And the people, that we built relationships with were either made redundant or were setting up their own outlet, whether it be a podcast or a website. It was hard because we're having to build those relationships and really, really carve out the hook to ensure that we got the attention of the producers and the journalists that no doubt were having the inbox flooded. But at the same time, I also have a website called social101.com, which is it's like a Sydney What's On guide for people that are new to the city or want to know what's going on. And I noticed a severe decline in the number of pitches that I was getting.
Really?
Yeah, you mentioned before about, you know, the press releases stacking up, and I'd get up to 500 press releases a day. So I have the fortune of being able to see it from the other side.
Yep.
So I see how it gets flooded and how you need to stand out. But it went from 500 a day to about 10 a day.
Wow. So that might be a good indicator of economic activity to some extent. And I guess that was probably also the case for executive producers of radio shows, because a lot of them weren't even coming in. They were operating from home. I mean, absolutely. A lot of the radio shows are being done from home. I see lots of television journalists as well. You can see that they're doing stuff from home. I mean, they do come to studios, but a lot of the finance guy on a TV news show, he'll do his segment or her segment, they'll do it from home.
Absolutely.
So it's actually hard to get to anyone, and particularly in person.
Yeah, it did make the job a lot trickier. But I guess because I had the amazing opportunity to set up my new tech startup, so it's the One Another community.
Yeah, this is the one we want to talk about. Because I want to know, when you say you had the amazing opportunity to do it, One Another community was set up during this period, yep?
It was actually set up when I was stranded in Spain. So the day after I arrived, the lockdown started. And I just had a feeling that inevitably this was going to come to Australia, that there was going to be a lockdown. I saw all the news reports of, you know, the toilet rolls being sold out and people, elderly citizens, not being able to get their essentials. And I just thought there has to be a solution here. And I'm a member of the Sydney Startup Facebook group. And I just did a shout out, you know, to say, I've got an idea for a social kindness platform where people can help one another, you know, just on a volunteer basis to bring communities together. Who's in?
You did that on what, day three of being locked in Spain?
Yeah, it was day three.
Day three.
Yeah, so I was just with my granny, and I just felt so fortunate that she had me. And it just, I guess it was upsetting and confronting that.
Were you inspired to do this, or were yours, it was more like out of necessity, or what was the event that made you think, I'm going to do this? Or reach out at least to my Facebook.
Yeah, I saw the post. I'm sure a few people saw it. There was a picture of an elderly gentleman in a supermarket, and he was stood next to the toilet roll aisle, and it was completely empty. And you could see that he looked distraught on the picture. And I just got to thinking that that's probably the one time a week he goes out to get his essential supplies. Mm. It's not easy to get to a supermarket if you don't live nearby. And it just really upset me, because I thought, you know, my granny's 89, and if she didn't have my stepdad, there's no way that she would be able to walk to the supermarket. And then I was imagining if she got there and then all the things that she needed weren't there, what would she do? And I think that even though everybody was scared, I also noticed a real rise in people feeling helpless but wanting to help. So I thought that was a unique opportunity. It was almost like the perfect storm where people were displaced, feeling helpless, that wanted to give back. So I guess it was like more of a call to arms, you know, who's available.
Well, people had more time to give back to.
Yeah. Well, I think that because people, had been displaced from roles and contracts were being pulled left, right and centre, and people were being furloughed, there was a unique situation where there were highly skilled people that weren't working that were able to use their skill set for good.
So that's probably part of the evolution of it, but like on day three.
Yeah.
Maybe you just step us out as to how you did the shout out on Facebook. I mean, why did you do what? Again, tell me about the Facebook community that you sent out to shout out to.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, what did you put on Facebook and what response did you get, and what was the purpose at that time? What were you trying to elicit from everybody?
Yeah, so just previous to me being in Spain, so the end of last year, I was fortunate enough to get into a tech accelerator program for female founders called She Starts, which is part of Blue Chili. And again, 800 people applied and they selected 8 female founders. So I did a 6-month intensive course learning how to utilize tools and how to build relationships and how to approach building a tech startup. So I learned a lot about validation, user research, the importance of building out your user journey, testing the prototype, what's the problem you're trying to solve, and also the different tools like Asana, Airtasker, Miro boards, Figma. So I was very fortunate to have that training at the end of last year.
So you've done this course, and you sort of know what all the hallmarks of starting something up.
Yeah.
And you've had a bit of first-hand experience. Then day three, you think to yourself, I'm going to shout out to my Facebook group. So what's a startup Facebook group?
So it's called Sydney Startups.
Sydney Startups,
And I'd been a long time kind of spectator.
Yeah, just observing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just
right.
watching. Yeah, well, that's always good to do. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, so I was observing. And then I'd noticed there was a lot of talk about, you know, COVID's happening. We are a group of experts. Like, who's got any ideas? So I started to feed back into this chat and said, what about a solution where we connect local people that can drive a car to deliver groceries to people that need it? And that was my original idea. And a lady commented on it and said, that's a great idea. Why don't you do it? And I just like didn't really have an answer to say, I don't know. Like, I don't want to do it. I was like, actually, I'm sat here in Spain. I've just got a phone call that I've lost my last PR client. I've just come out of this accelerator program. Why don't I do it? So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And then I did a post that basically just said, I've had an idea for a startup, a platform that connects people and communities to help one another. Who's in? Like, let's do it. Let's do a hackathon. You know, let's have 24 hours where we see what we can do. And I couldn't believe it. Like, honestly, overnight, 50 people DM'd me on Facebook. And I set up a type form as well. So the type form that I set up was understanding what the skill set was, how much time they had and why they wanted to be involved in it. So I could understand how invested they were. And then, yeah, over the next 24 to 48 hours, all of a sudden we had a Figma wireframe. We had our user journeys fleshed out. We'd already conducted over 60 user interviews on both sides of the marketplace. So we came up with the solution of a marketplace where we connected people that wanted to offer assistance with people that needed assistance, basically, so we could connect them.
But I need to ask a question. So you've created a marketplace of supplier and demand.
Yeah.
You've got your supply or people who've got time to help, and you've spreadsheeted that somehow, and you've got the skills and, you know, times available, I guess, and that's your supply side. But on that Facebook, on Sydney Startup Facebook, was the demand side there too? Were they following this? Like, how did you sort of assess the demand side? In other words, I'm a little old man. I'd like someone to help me pick up my groceries on Sunday afternoon. Like, I mean, how'd you do that?
So I quite quickly, with my PR background, knew that I needed to set up kind of a hub or like a centralized location. So I set up a Facebook page, and the original name for the startup was Good Neighbors. So I set up a promoted Facebook post in the wall that said, we're looking to speak to people who may need assistance, you know, in the current situation, in the current pandemic. Please reach out, you know, if you'd like to chat. And we got over 60 people reaching out to the link was basically again to a type form that reached out to say, you know, we do need help and we're happy to help you in any way. So we did 50% phone calls, 50% surveys.
And so from this research, you saw there's a marketplace where you could match supply and demand.
Yeah.
And your name wasn't called One Another Community, was something else.
It was Good Neighbors. And then I did the research into trademarking the name. So I set up the business as a social enterprise for profit because we wanted to build a scalable, self-sustainable model that was investable as well. So when I started thinking about another name, I'd love to say we did a brand workshop and we figured it all out, but I literally used the Neighbors theme tune. So I just like thought, oh, Good Neighbors, I love that name so much. And the next line in that is, are there for one another? So I just thought One Another was kind of the perfect way to summarize who we are, what we want to do, and that, yeah, the problem that we're trying to solve.
So off the back of COVID, and to some extent this is a great pivot, but you've lost your PR clients during this period. But probably at the time you thought, well, this could last forever. How do I know?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know on you. You've set up a for-profit, and you use an important word, investable, social enterprise.
That's right.
And the way you execute is you create a marketplace, obviously all this is online, you create a marketplace matching supply of services, which are people, with the service to the demand for those who need it. So I want to talk to you about how did you curate the services that are being offered and how do you curate that relative to the demand? So I want to know how you did that sort of stuff. I mean, and I want to understand the business model, because it's for profit. It's not a not-for-profit, it's a for-profit.
That's right.
So we're trying to work out how you make money out of this.
Yep.
So we'll go to the break, we'll come back, and we'll talk about this.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So I'm back from the break. I'm here with Lisa Hollingshead, and she's the founder of a business called One Another Community, which is sort of a marketplace online platform matching people who can help out those who are in need, maybe through spare time or whatever, but it's for profit. It's not a not-for-profit. It's a for-profit social enterprise. And it also born out of her sitting there with her granny and her mum and her little boy in Spain during the lockdown period in March this year, which would have been a pretty horrendous period. And I got to ask you, Lisa, when you say it's for profit, how do you make money out of it?
It's a really good question. And obviously, building any business, we need to look at, is it sustainable? You know, can it run itself? And we've been really fortunate to have been built by 100% pro bono work from skilled professionals.
So just explain what not everybody knows what pro bono means.
Using my jargon, I normally hate using jargon as well. So pro bono basically means that you're doing doing the work in kind. So you're not charging for that work.
Yeah, it's a freebie.
It's a freebie, yeah. And that's one thing that it's interesting you say that, because I'd never wanted to fall into the perception that One Another was built on free labor, because that's not what it's about. It's about people who want to give back, and they might not necessarily want to do a gold coin donation or do a fundraiser, but they have this amazing skill set that gets charged out at a very high rate. You know, there's a lot of charities, not-for-profits, new business startups can't afford. So yeah, I definitely wanted to steer away from that. So we have a feature within the platform that we're building where we want to reward people that are doing good neighbourly deeds beyond that of intrinsic reward. So we're actually developing a good neighbour badge functionality, whereby if you do a good neighbourly deed, you can get a good neighbour badge. And the more badges that you collect, you can unlock rewards from sponsors. So say, for example, a big supermarket might sponsor 5 Good Neighbour badges and provide a 15% discount at point of sale. Or they might reward, a cinema chain might reward 20 Good Neighbour badges with a free access to their premium cinema experience. So essentially what we're creating is an opportunity for brands to connect with members of the public that are doing good within the community, but it's also an advertising opportunity for them to either promote, you know, specific products or to drive people, to drive footfall into
their store. So is your business model, Lisa, building a big audience and then selling in, let's call it sponsorship, I might be a cinema. I'm trying to attract people to come back to the movies. And one way I might be able to do that is actually advertise on your website, the One Another Community website. Just forget about the Good Neighbour Awards or whatever that thing is, that the badge. But I might just advertise it because I just know that my community looks at your stuff, and they look at your stuff because they think someone's doing good, you know.
Yeah.
Is that your business model?
That is for phase one. So what we've created now is the marketplace of members of community helping one another and being rewarded by brands. That's the next phase. But I don't want it to become a place where people feel like they're being sold to constantly. Like, that's not what I want it to be. I want to limit the number of badge rewards and only align with brands that that whose values align with one another as well. And the next phase of the platform, we're essentially recreating what we did with one another. So we're connecting highly skilled pro bono professionals with organisations and charities and not-for-profits that need assistance in a specific area. So looking at how one another was built in such an incredible way in kind, creating a second version of the marketplace that connects those professionals that want to give back in a way that they're able to.
So I'm a lawyer in Mossman.
Yep.
Okay, let's say that. You've got a little legal practice there. I do all sorts of, you know, conveyancing and local stuff, help people with their DA applications, whatever it is. How would I engage with one another community? And I've got spare time, by the way.
Yeah, you've
got
spare
time.
Yep.
And I really want to give back.
Yeah, so we do have a function on the current platform where you can offer pro bono support. So you could log on to one another and post a offer of assistance. And you could say, I'm a lawyer in Mossman. Mm-hmm. I have 5 hours a week that I'd like to dedicate to a cause or a person that needs that support. Let me know the details and we can connect. Then people can then go onto the marketplace, onto the dashboard, search for offers of assistance, and they can also increase or decrease that search function. So they can say, I just want to look for people that are offering pro bono hours, and then they'll be served people in their area that are offering pro bono support. And then they'll also, in the next iteration, be able to drill that down to industry. So whether it's legal or PR or UX. And then the app, in the same way that it connects members of the community with one another, it opens up a messenger app where you can chat in the messenger app that's completely secure, that you can leave at any time if you feel uncomfortable with the exchange or no longer want to proceed. And then you connect and then you complete the task.
And apart from me being a good citizen, is there anything else in it for me, the lawyer in Mossman, by way of example?
We're doing some user research currently with CSR managers, so corporate social responsibility managers for big organisations.
Yeah, they've all got one.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've got big budgets too.
They do. So we're currently speaking with them to understand what is their current problem that needs to be solved. You know, do they have a workforce that want to give back and want to give pro bono hours, but don't know where to start? You know, the main problem that we found when we did the research in the beginning is that people want to help, people want to volunteer, they just don't know how to go about it. And when they do find an opportunity, obviously, like, it can be quite laborious, you know, it can be quite intense and people disengage before they get to the point of helping people.
It gets too hard.
Yeah, it's too hard basket. Put it in the too hard basket and walk away. So what one another is trying to do is to make it easier for people to help one another without all the different, you know, red tape that's all around it.
Yeah, because I mean, like, let's say I just think of a good example. And you're a financial planner, and you want to offer some free time, some of your time pro bono to someone who might need some advice on financial planning, but they come along to you and they. The first thing a financial planner's got to do, not to breach the license requirements, is they've got to ask you a whole lot of questions. They've got to spend hours within it. Next thing you know, someone's got a really complicated setup, and they've allocated 5 hours, and end up spending 10 hours.
Yeah.
Because of the regulatory environment, they're required to do much more than they ever expected. The next thing you know, they've got a client there, one who's spent double the amount of time on, two probably hasn't got that much money to invest anyway. Has high expectations in terms of returns.
Yep.
And something goes wrong, so the share market, they might say buy BHP and Westpac and CBA or something.
Yep.
And let's say the share market, for no reason, no fault of the advisors at all, the share market goes down a bit. The next thing you know, the client's really unhappy. They're not really a client. I guess they are a client though. So that stuff's pretty difficult. How do you have to monitor this? And you facilitate it.
Mm-hmm.
The website facilitates it.
Yep.
But do you have to somehow monitor these things?
At the moment, we have obviously community guidelines and we've got terms and conditions of using the site. As I mentioned, we've got the messenger service so people can have a chat before they commit, you know, to actually completing the offer or request of assistance, so they can try and understand more readily what's required to determine, you know, if they have got the time to give it. But we do ask that people obviously conduct due diligence as they would do with any client. What we're looking to do with the next iteration is actually to have a dashboard. So say, for example, whether you're a lawyer in Mossman or you're a CSR manager at somewhere like Deloitte, for example, you actually come into a dashboard and you can see how many connections have taken place, how many members of your organisation have offered pro bono support, how many have been completed, how many have not, you know, have got a high bounce rate, you know, where they've connected but then they've disengaged. So we're looking to actually have insight-driven dashboards so that those corporate social responsibility managers or lawyer from Mossman can actually see the value that it's bringing as well. And it just ensures accountability and transparency as well, because there's a lot of people within organizations that don't want to do a fundraiser, that don't want to do the gold coin, but they are experts in their field and they're more than happy, you know, to dedicate 1% of their time to give back to community focused organizations or charities that need that support. And it's about, rather than donating to charity, saving people money. So it's making a pledge, you know.
And also, it's not coming out of your pocket. It's just coming out of your sweat.
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people don't want to put, we're hit too many times about, oh, can you give me money? Can you give me, I'm a good example. I mean, I get hit all the time for money and I just go, no, I'm done. I'm not doing any more money.
Yeah.
But in terms of time, maybe, I don't know, for whatever the reason is, it's easier to justify giving you someone some time
or
intellect than, or sweat than it is just keep unload money out of your bank account all the time.
Absolutely. And I think there was a quote out there, I can never remember it exactly, but it's something on the lines of, very often the person offering the assistance receives more reward than the person they're giving it to. You know, that intrinsic reward that you get when you're helping someone is so valuable, and it's great for mental health. You know, it's great for so many different things. And I think now more than ever, people are becoming aware of the value of being selfless, you know, and helping somebody else. Like with my PR agency, I've always given 5 hours pro bono work a week to organizations that I believe in, because yes, I want to help people, absolutely. But honestly, it makes me feel good. You know, I really like the fact and seeing that if I give someone, you know, 5 hours worth of pitching a week and they get a great piece, you know, on the Today Show or, you know, Sunrise, that really rewards me intrinsically. And I think there's something in that for the next iteration of One Another, that there's a workforce of people that want to give back, and the money that it could potentially save organizations is endless, really. And that's what excites me.
And the value you can offer. Do you think that the whole COVID pandemic, et cetera, has created a new humanity? I mean, that people are thinking this way more, in a more refined way, a more articulated way?
Without a shadow of a doubt. I think it's safe to say that recent events have woken up a desire in many to give back.
Where do you think that comes from? Like, what is that? I mean, is there our appreciation of how lucky we are for some reason? I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of how lucky I am being someone living in Sydney as opposed to Melbourne. I mean, I really do. I thought about it this morning. I was listening to someone talking on the radio about their life in Melbourne, and I thought, wow, I'm so lucky.
Mm.
I mean, I'm starting to see stark differences between my life and other people's lives. Is that across the board? Are you seeing it?
I think so. I think with the pandemic, it's really brought to the fore people's vulnerability. And I think, you know, when you hear about things happening in other countries or to people that are in a different socioeconomic group to you or across a border from you, it's very hard for people to actually stop and think and relate. You know, it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. And this is just my opinion. I just feel that because it's so close to home, it's awoken, an awareness in people that we need to look after one another and we need to give back. And we are in a very fortunate position where we are able to. And I think sometimes, slightly unfortunate as it is, when it's on your doorstep, when it stands to affect those that you love, you're going to act more readily, you're going to act more aggressively. It's primal, isn't it? You want to protect the ones that you love. And if that means also reaching out to help others in the same situation, then you're going to be motivated to do that.
So your business premise is sort of based upon that, I mean, to a large extent.
Yeah.
When COVID's over, do you think people will go back to their old ways?
I mean, the positive side of me definitely thinks that that won't be the case. I think that we talk about the new normal, don't we? You know,
permanent change.
Yeah, yeah, I think
word
so.
Normal, but let's call it permanent change.
Yeah, so we're going to call it permanent change. And I think that people want to feel like they have a sense of purpose now. And if there's something that they can do, they will. And we've always, whenever we've been looking at our business model and looking at, you know, our 2-year, 5-year plan, One Another was never built as a COVID solution. It was built as a long-term solution to the loneliness epidemic, which is rife across Australia. You know, there's a stat out there that states that loneliness can be as detrimental to your health as smoking and drinking, you know, and that's pretty confronting.
Yeah, most of the suicides in the country areas.
Yeah.
It's huge relatively as a percentage relative to the rest of the place.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And I would say that One Another was built not as a solution to COVID, as a solution to what COVID had caused. You know, like the solution for COVID was to lock us away, you know, and to keep us away from one another. But as a result of that, it's created so many other problems socially, economically. So One Another is to combat that. And those issues were there already. They're just massively magnified because we've been put in this situation.
And when we don't have something, we all of a sudden appreciate it. And what the governments have done is taken away something from us that we always took for granted.
Yeah.
And it's not just been able to go to the supermarket, but it's been able to go and visit your father who's 80, my father who lived on the other side of Sydney. I couldn't go and visit him for a while. Your granny or whatever.
Yeah.
They're things, and all of a sudden they become important to us.
And I would argue that the loneliness experienced as a result of being locked away is far more detrimental, you know, to those people than you know, the chance that they might get COVID. And I understand that we've got to rally around and we've got to protect those that are vulnerable, which is why I created One Another Community. But there is a part of me that feels like that we also need to be able to go on living with this in our world and protect those that are at most at risk. Because, yeah, we need to learn to live with it. Because like you said, it's not the new normal. What did you say it is?
It's a permanent change.
That's the one,
It's a permanent change.
Yeah.
I mean, it's permanent. I think it is.
Yeah.
Permanent change of state of mind too. Our states of mind and as to what's important has permanently changed, yeah. I think.
I agree.
Our generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing with One Another as well. You know, when you talk about the future and is it just a COVID solution, in a ideal world, I'm working towards One Another being a platform where, say, for example, my granny was alone in Spain. I could put my granny's address in Spain and I could post a call out to that community in Spain and say, my granny's 89, she can't make it to the shops. She's hurt a hip or, you know, she's not feeling very well. Is anybody there that can help her? You know, and it becomes this worldwide kindness platform where you call on people to just be there for one another. And that's why I created it because, yeah, I was in Spain when it happened. I got to see it firsthand and see how frightening it is.
How far has it gone so far? Like, what's your membership? Where are you at with it?
Yeah, so we actually, because we were built on a volunteer basis, we had a lot of roadblocks along the way. And we found that working with the team of developers on a volunteer basis, kind of, we were taking two steps forward, then we were taking five steps back and the code was getting broken that was already finalized. So it ended up taking us 5 months to get the platform to a point where we were happy to have it live.
That's quick, but anyway, it's not slow. That's pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible when it's all volunteer driven. Mm. But yeah, it launched 4 weeks ago. And when I say it launched, it was very much a soft launch. So for those that don't know what a soft launch is, we didn't do the big bang, you know, we are here. There wasn't a big PR push behind it. We launched it in the Northern Beaches, just so, because that's where I'm from, in Sydney. And we just did some community outreach. So we partnered with Community Northern Beaches and Goodwill Hunting Co. So they could let their members know that they were backing it, you know, so to work with respected organisations. And that with James Griffin, who's the MP.
The minister.
Yeah, the Manly. Yeah, for Manly.
Yeah, I know James, yeah.
And he really got behind it, which was wonderful.
He's a good guy.
He's a really good guy. And he was so...
He's Minister of Veteran Affairs or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's actually just... The way that he's gone into the community and turned it around and just brought it together is incredible. He was the perfect person to speak to and he really loves what we're doing and is backing it and connected me with Manly Rotary. And we're now at a point now where we're actually launching this week.
So you're only just launching.
Exactly right. Yeah. So we've already got 500 people on there and there's connections happening every day. And we've just introduced the notes of gratitude function as well. So we're calling on people to just say thank you to people that have put a smile on their face. And we're working with a lot of the social kindness Facebook pages across Australia. So there's viral kindness and the kindness pandemic. So yeah, say thank you to the people that have helped make those groups a reality.
So you've built a total marketplace.
Yeah.
Through volunteer time.
Yeah, it's a really nice way in which that we've had all these incredible people come together to build this platform. The only money that I've spent is to register the business. the hosting fee, and we have to pay a fee. The app was created using Bubble, which is a really great piece of tech where you don't need code to build an app. You need to understand workflows, and you need to ideally have a developer work on it that understands how you piece it together. But yeah, to create something that actually works and does the job that we wanted it to do is incredible. And that's what we want to replicate with the platform for other people to take advantage of kindness as well.
It's a great social enterprise. It's a very clever idea. It's really tapped into where our heads are going in terms of trying to help out others who are less fortunate, only because we're now much more aware of what that means. Whereas before, we were always on our thing and we really didn't think about anything else because we just thought about what we're doing. And we've had some time to think and some time to compare.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was, I'm going to give you an opportunity. Do you have a question for me? Do you want to ask me something?
Yeah, definitely. So when I kind of like breezed over a little bit when we had the team of developers that were developing the app, and we had obviously all these beautiful designs in Figma, of which are the wireframes of what it was going to look like. And I was so close to the platform, I could touch it. But after 4 months of taking 2 steps forward and 5 steps back, I had to just keep pushing forward. But there were times when there were tears. You know, I wasn't frustrated because people were giving their time, but it was striking that balance between having accountability for people, being thankful, but wanting to have a product that helps people, because that's what I've driven to do. Has there been a point in your career, you know, where there's been a massive roadblock or you felt that you're not going to be able to move forward with it? And what was it that drove you to keep going, and how did you overcome it?
I've had plenty of those. usually in my game, it's about capital, not knowing where the capital is going to come from or not being able to justify putting more money into something for further development. And the way I overcome these things is, generally speaking, I look at originally why I started the thing in the first place. What was my original idea?
Yeah.
Which is, what you got a great purpose. I mean, it'd be hard to put your purpose into a couple of words, but ultimately you're just helping people. So helping people, all sides, both sides, both you help the people on the supply side and you help the people on the demand side, because the people on the supply side actually want to get a buzz out of doing something good.
Yeah, helping people to be good.
Yeah, so I keep going back. So when I can't work out how to do something, it could be how to get the thing up and running, just kick it off, you know, after I spend all this time and effort, you know, like I'm getting frustrated, roadblocks, et cetera. When I can't work out how to do something, what do? Well, I work out why I'm doing something.
Yeah.
So I go from how back to why, and why just gives me a bit of a chance to think, okay, I've got to do this. I think also too, what's really important is that you've got to give yourself a rest, because you get really tired. Generally, when we can't work out how to do something, a lot of times I think it's because we're just tired. We're just sleep deprived or just worn out. You get worn out. This stuff, because it requires energy.
Absolutely.
It requires you to speak fast, talk fast, think fast, act fast, and move sideways, not literally, but within a business environment. And that stuff just saps your energy. If I said to you today, I want you to go down to the gym and I want you to sprint that way, sprint to the left, sprint to the right, go diagonally, do chin-ups, do push-ups, do sit-ups, and you just keep doing that all day, eventually you're going to be completely stuffed and you won't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
And that happens to our brain.
Absolutely.
And our brain, and when I don't know how to do something, generally speaking, it's because my brain is cooked. I'm cooked. And I find two things that I do. I make sure I give myself a break. It might only be for a day or two. Do nothing. Or go for a walk. I mean, nature's a big thing, but go for a walk along the beach or go somewhere and then think about why you're doing this.
Yeah. And it's so funny you say that, because I do feel like COVID has forced people to stop. And that's one thing that I took from COVID, is that when I lost all my PR clients, I was able to, you know, get up in the morning, and yes, I had this startup, but I could go for a walk on the beach. And the best thing I've ever done is, and I've only done it in the last 3 months really, is make sure in the morning I have a routine that's non-negotiable. Mm. You need to have like things that fill up your cup, you know, at the beginning of the day.
So you're spoil.
Yeah, exactly. So that you can then, you've got something to give. Mm. You know, you can't run on empty, like you say. Mm. And I just think founder burnout is just so rife, because they think that they've just got to keep on going. And it's like, you're no use to anyone if you, like you said, you're flat. If you burn out, what can you give?
Well, I think there's also a dumb perception out there that people who are successful in startups are like a machine, and that, oh, I've got to be that way because look at this person. Look at her go. She's blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but like people look at me. Like I take breaks. I breaks. And like you said, I mean, I make sure I spoil myself. I get up earlier, so I got more time in the morning.
Yeah, same.
To give myself some time. I mean, people might say I want to sleep, that's fine. But for me, I'd rather be awake and consciously giving myself a spoil.
Yeah.
Breakfast, gym, walk, dog, blah, blah, blah. They're things that belong to me.
Yeah.
No phone.
Yeah.
You know, like, forget the phone. So you've got to do these things. You've got to spoil yourself. And anyone who's listening out there, sure, when I'm on it, I'm on it. But the rest of the time, I'm actually trying to find myself an opportunity to get off it.
Yeah.
And so you got to do that. That's really important. And because I don't know anybody who's doing 17, 18 hours a day on it the whole time, because that's just bullshit.
You can't do it. You know, I think there's so many people that take pride in being busy. You know, I'm so busy. And it's like, well, what's that proving to anybody? You know, it isn't a badge of honor. You know, when people ask you how you are, you should be content. You should be happy, motivated.
Yeah, and I don't want everybody, from my point of view anyway, I don't want everyone to think, oh, this is Mark talking about life balance, life-work balance. That's all bullshit. It's just about, you don't say, oh, I've got to get a balance. It's not, you can't find a balance. There's no such thing. But you just got to make sure you take time out whenever it is. Whether it's in your case with Albie, whether it's me with my dog, or just hanging out with a mate, having breakfast, something like that. You got to keep backfilling these timeouts.
Yeah.
You got to say, okay, shit, I better give myself a break here. Otherwise you will burn out. And when you burn out, you can't ever work out how to fix something or how to do something or how to execute on something.
Yeah.
Lisa, really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Great. It's a great social enterprise. I like the business angle of it too. I can see it actually being very appealing. I wish you all the very best. You've only started off small, and I know you're just sort of trying it out on the northern beaches at the moment, but I can see this taking off, not only here, in other places. So good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Fingers crossed. So nice to meet you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.